This edition of the AfriCast is sponsored by Dell Technologies. Everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotzer, and joining me today is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Lichetti.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you guys doing this week?
Live still. It's very hot outside. It's very hot.
I feel like
hot, hot still, and tired.
I feel like a live still is the minimum specification for any answer to anything.
Anyway. Minimum is good enough sometimes, I guess.
What have you got for us this week?
I have two new DLCs to talk about. They came out a few days ago. I think it's a week now. That is the Ancient Gods Part 1 for Doom Eternal and the Crown Tundra for Pokemon. One of them is better than the other, and it's not the one you think. Let's talk about Pokemon first, because that's the one I've actually been enjoying more. So the Crown Tundra is one of two expansions that have come out for Pokemon Sword and Shield, and it's really unique because this is the first time Pokemon mainline games have done DLC, and it's not just DLC, they've done expansions. Now, they've done it in a Pokemon way because you can't just buy the one you want. You have to buy an expansion pass, and then you get both. And it's a whole story about should this have been included in the base games? I think yes, but I'll talk about that at another stage, maybe in another podcast. And it's a bit messy, but let's talk about the actual content, what you're getting here. First of all, lots of Pokemon are back this time. There's a few dozen, if not 100 or so, that are back that were cut from the original base games and weren't included in the Isle of Armor, which was the previous expansion. And basically, this DLC is made up of an expedition. You get roped into following this guy. I don't know how you pronounce his name. I think it's Peony, P-E-O-N-Y. It's a weird name. You get roped into his little expedition where you're basically hunting legendary Pokemon, and you go on three main missions to hunt these Pokemon. And then there's a fourth one, which I won't really talk about because it's kind of, it's not hidden, but it's not advertised broadly. And I've been having a lot of fun with it. These aren't just, you know, run into the tall grass and there's a Pokemon and you catch it. They make things a bit more interesting than that. It's kind of like a treasure hunt. The expedition leader, Peony, gives you clues. You need to follow those clues or use a walkthrough, and you'll find these Pokemon. You battle them, you catch them. The main legendary that is on the box art is this guy with a huge head. He has a whole storyline. He's the main thrust of this expansion. And then the other ones kind of just build on it a little bit. And like I said, a lot of favorites from other generations are back, including new versions of Zapdos, Articuno, and Moltres. They've changed their types. They're now Galarian form. And they look really cool. Aside from these adventures that you go on, the big new thing is something called Dynamax Adventure. Now, just as a recap, Dynamax is the system where you make your Pokemon big. It's been memed upon many times, and I think it's worthy of those memes because it's kind of silly, right? You just make your Pokemon big. It's less to think about compared to something in the previous generations like Mega Evolutions. But Dynamax Adventure is really cool because if you guys played any of the other old Pokemon games where they had the Battle Factory let you rent Pokemon and then use them to try and complete the tournament. And Dynamax Adventure is kind of the same because you can't just use any Pokemon you want. You actually have to rent a specific Pokemon out of three from the people who are organizing this. And then you go on a little adventure, and it's really fun. And then as you progress the story, you get more legendaries added. You get the Ultra Beasts, which were taken out of the game from previous generations. And you also get the legendaries that were removed. And it's really fun. I was very jaded. As you can tell, by the way, I said it's been memed upon. I wasn't really looking forward to just doing the same stuff again because Dynamaxing was in the base game. But the way they've improved upon it with the Dynamax Adventure is a lot of fun. And I've been playing it a shocking amount. I'm happy that the Nintendo Switch doesn't give you a little readout of the hours like Steam does. But I've been having a lot of fun. I still don't know if it's worth the money. So I'm going to use dollars now because I'll put the rands in the story. But The base game of Pokemon Sword and Shield is $60. These expansions are $30. And because you get two, you could kind of look at it as a $15 add-on. And I do think it's worth the money, but I still think it should have been in the base game. Before I go on a little more, I just want to know, do you guys play Pokemon at all? Did you play it when you were young?
No.
I remember the Wii Lad.
As a wee lad. Okay, so I've been playing these, you know, since the original, since Red and Blue. So to see how far it's come, this is kind of like the crown title. This is the capping off of this generation because they haven't announced anything new. And as a send-off, I really think it's good. I think this expansion is worth $15, much more so than the Isle of Armor. I kind of think the split is like $20, $10, or even more heavily weighed towards this. It really feels like they took the mistakes they made in the base game and some of the mistakes they made in the Isle of Armor, and they applied them here. But the problem is, and this is a big problem I'm going to talk about when we get to Doom Eternal after this, it's just more of the same. Now, when I've said that in the past, people say, what do you expect from DLC? What do you expect from an expansion? But I expect some change, right? Sure, the Dynamax adventure is changed from the regular Dynamax raid dens, but they really haven't done enough. It seems that when they created Sword and Shield, they made very set in stone fundamentals, and they're not at all interested in changing them. And this is just more of that. And I said this in my Isle of Armor review, which came out a few months ago. If you had big problems with Sword and Shield, if you had issues with that game which you could not look past and you didn't like those games for that, these expansions aren't going to do anything to change your mind at all. It's more of the same. So I won't waffle on about it much more. I'll have more about that on the site soon. I do want to put a few more hours into it to catch a few more of the legendaries. I think I've got almost all of them, and then I'll have a story on the site. For now, I'll just I'll link to another story about what's in the DLC so you can check it out. Now, I mentioned Doom Eternal. It has an expansion, but it's also weird because you can buy the expansion called The Ancient Gods Part 1 on its own. Now, I'm going to put the question at the top here. Did you guys play Doom Eternal or Doom 2016?
Just Doom 2016.
Yeah, same.
Okay, so the reason I was asking is because Doom Eternal has some changes that not a lot of people liked. For example, in Doom 2016, you basically had to play until you unlocked the double shot advancement for the super shotgun, right? I don't know if you guys did that in your playthrough, but basically, once you unlocked that, you could just use that gun for the rest of the game. In Doom Eternal, your ammo capacity is very low, and you get it back by killing monsters with the chainsaw, demons, sorry, with the chainsaw in the middle of a fight. And changes like that, as well as the visual changes and a bigger focus on the story, were elements that some people really liked in Doom Eternal compared to Doom 2016, and it's something that a lot of people didn't like. And with this expansion, with the standalone title, it's more of the same. I mean, if you read I'm on the Steam page right now and you look what there is, it says new mission, new locations, new enemies. It's just more, right? I'm reading through, these aren't patch notes, but they're kind of selling points. And having played almost all of this expansion already, they're not mixing things up. They're just adding on top. And that's good if all you wanted from this was an expansion of Doom Eternal where you like the base game, you just want to keep going, right? After the credits rolled, you just wanted to keep steaming through. If that's what you wanted, great. That's exactly what The Ancient Gods Part 1 is. If you played Doom Eternal and you got to the credits and you said, I like that, but I wish they changed certain things, this isn't for you. I do want to talk about some specifics. First of all, I thought they would at least give you a tutorial, right? Doom Eternal came out a while ago, and I'd kind of forgotten how to play. And I thought, I'm sure they'll give you like a quick tutorial saying, hey, according to your save file, you played this at launch. You may have forgotten how to play. It came out in March this year. There was no tutorial. They didn't tell you about how the systems work. They just threw you in. And again, that's good if you still have that stuff committed to memory. It was bad for me because I'd completely forgotten about it. Doom Eternal compared to Doom 2016 is not harder, even though I do think it's harder. It's more complex because there's a lot of stuff going on. You have two different types of grenades. You have a flamethrower. You have this. You have that. It's a lot of extra stuff compared to Doom 2016. So I really wish there was a tutorial. And man, this expansion is hard. So in the original game, in Doom Eternal, the last few levels where you're in a city and then you fight the final boss, which I won't spoil, a lot of people said that was really difficult. From my experience, the Ancient Gods Part 1 is as difficult as the end of the base game right from the beginning. This really feels like it was made for people who just finished the base game and want to play this immediately. But there's a disconnect there because, again, this came out in October of 2020 and that game came out in March. So I really wish they would have had a gentler difficulty curve. And all they've really added in terms of new stuff is new demons. I've watched development of Doom Eternal and I know how much work went into the guns and how difficult they were to make work properly and to be satisfying to use, and they are, but I really wish we maybe got right at the beginning, right as you started the game, like a new gun. Even if they brought back the pistol from Doom 2016 and they just made it a bit stronger, I think that really would have gone a long way. So at the beginning, just give that to you, and even if it's not very good, just give you something new. So again, I'll have more on that soon. I am struggling with this a bit. My muscle memory of Doom Eternal is gone. So I've had to relearn everything here. And yeah, I just wish that the curve was a bit gentler. And I'm having a really tough go of this. I mean, in all my playthrough of Doom Eternal, I didn't get offered Sentinel armor once, but I just got it last night in the Ancient Guard. So Sentinel armor is if you die on the same boss a few times in the game, it will kind of throw you a bone and it will say, hey, do you want Sentinel armor? It will make things a bit easier. So it's very difficult. I'm not going to knock down the difficulty. I'm on Hurt Me Plenty, which is medium. I'm not even on Hard or Ultra Nightmare. So I'm going to keep trucking on. I don't know if it's worth the money yet. So I'm just looking here. The base, the standalone game is 289 Rand. But I can't see on the Steam page how much it is as DLC for Doom Eternal. But when I have a full review, I'll have more information for that. So yeah, that's Pokemon Crown Tundra. And that is Doom Eternal, The Ancient Gods Part 1. I'll have more information on them soon. I'm very surprised that I'm enjoying Pokemon more than Doom, because for the base games of these, it was the opposite way around.
Cool. Robin, you've got some news regarding Samsung.
Yeah, so this is more of a report than, I guess, an official news story. But Samsung are reportedly looking at ditching their wall charger for packaging of the upcoming flagship phone. So as you may or may not know, Samsung is potentially looking to launch the new Galaxy S device, whether that's called the S30 or the S21, we don't know yet. But they're potentially looking to launch that in January, a couple of months earlier than it normally does. Samsung, I guess more traditionally, has launched its new Galaxy S devices around MWC, which is usually around late Feb, early March. But it could be changing tactics, I guess, given everything that's happened during 2020. Nothing's really a certainty anymore. So getting your devices out as quickly as possible makes a bit more sense. But the main thrust of the story here is that there could be potentially ditching the wall charger for the packaging. If that sounds familiar, that's because Apple have done the same for the iPhone 12. Devices that they recently launched. We actually had a pretty in-depth discussion about why that is terrible in one of our recent podcasts. And yeah, so it looks like Samsung might be doing the same. Again, we don't know if this is motivated by a desire to be more green or environmentally conscious. It could also simply just be a factor of them trying to copy Apple. There's always been a game of one-upsmanship between Apple and Samsung over the years. So this could be another a go at that. But that said, this isn't the first time that Samsung's kind of looked at its packaging and seen what it can change up. In early 2019, for example, they decided to go for sustainable materials for their packaging. So I guess this, if this decision does come through, it would kind of fall in line with kind of what Samsung have been thinking in recent years. That said, I was just perhaps wanting to get you guys' thoughts as far as Do you think there'll be as big an outcry if someone like Samsung does this as opposed to Apple? Because I know sometimes Apple does get judged a bit more harshly than other manufacturers, given their popularity and the pricing of their products. Kind of, what are your guys' thoughts? Would you sledge Samsung for doing something like this?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, if we sledge Apple for it, then Samsung gets the same treatment. We treat everybody fairly here. And I'm not even just being facetious or joking here. Like, I'm 100% serious, because Samsung has been mocking Apple for removing the woolwort from its packaging since that news broke. And now there's a rumor that they might remove it. Like, no. I mean, you're not going to get away from this scot-free just because you were the memer and, look, we still got something in our box. No. You're going to get the same treatment. However, that having been said, I don't think that the outcry will be as big, because for the most part, I think many people have an Android charger or a charger that works for Android. It's a USB Type-C cable or whatever it might be. But then again, I mean, there's the question of when you buy a third-party piece of kit and it blows up, who's responsible there? So, yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping that people treat Samsung the same way they treated Apple, and that this notion of let's remove the charger from our box just dies, because it's stupid.
Yeah, Clinton, your thoughts? I know that you're a Note user.
Yeah, so we were talking about this earlier in the week, Robin and I, and I'm quite angry about this, nerd rage and whatever, because I actually have a Note 9. I've had it since launch, and it's starting to, but I wouldn't say it's starting to show its age, but I am having problems with the battery. And this whole thing about chargers has actually been very poignant for me, because I was looking at getting a new charger just on its own. And man, those things are expensive. I think the cheapest one you can get that's in an official Samsung branding, a fast charger that is about 500 Rand. And the bundle I was looking at that was an official charger, fast charger, and an official USB Type-C cable was like 800 Rand. It's absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I've tried my best to take care of this phone and to nurse the battery, but I mean, it has been about 3 years now. That's usually how long you'd expect these things to last. So I can't complain too much, but I can complain about this, because I think not having the charge in the box is absolute nonsense. Sorry, Robin, let me just rage a bit more. I really think this whole smokescreen that Apple and probably Samsung will say that it's better for the environment is nonsense. Because if they sell the charger separately, it will need its own box. It will need to be shipped, on a container or in a plane. I think it's going to pollute more. And secondly, I think it's just a way to make money. I do not believe either company for a single second that it has anything to do with the environment. I really don't. So I think it's dumb. In terms of everyone else, how do I think they're going to react? I think that there's not going to be an outrage immediately when they announce it, except for people who are into tech like us. But I think in a year or two, when people who just want a new phone and don't follow the news like we do, I think they're going to go to a store, they're going to go online, and either they'll see the charger isn't included in the box, or they won't, and they'll buy the phone, and then they'll go on Twitter and say, what the hell is this? So yeah, I think the outrage won't be right now. I think it will be in a little bit when the general consumer who doesn't keep up with the news finds this out and gets very angry. I think that's when we'll see, I don't want to be dramatic, but I was going to say the reckoning. I think that's when we'll see the fallout of this decision, if it happens.
Yes, I guess I wanted to bring up two more points around this. The first is that, and also I guess kind of alluded to it in our Apple 12 focus podcast, it was that third-party charging solutions, because you're not getting, I guess, the official branded Apple, the official branded Samsung option, you do run the risk of potentially degrading your battery at a far higher rate, or potentially voiding any kind of warranty you have there. So for me, that's perhaps the most concerning aspect, is that it will, because you're not getting the charger in the box when you purchase a new device, it could force a lot of consumers just to kind of go for a cheaper third-party option, or just use their existing charger that might be a few years older and not necessarily support or adequately support the fast charging and some of the other kind of elements that a lot of the new charging aspects of newer devices actually cater to. The other kind of point I wanted to raise here was just with regards to how, as much as every single smartphone maker wants to think that they are unique, they are a snowflake, they are a butterfly or whatever, everyone follows everyone else. So when you have two of the three biggest smartphone makers in the world saying, we are ditching chargers, I guarantee most other smartphone makers will start doing the same. And unfortunately, then it's like going to start impacting consumers because now they're going to have to pay additionally for that. Perhaps a very savvy smartphone maker will look to bundle the chargers with the new devices when they launch in South Africa.
That
would be a very smart move.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose, though?
Exactly. Bundling them in another box defeats the purpose of their saying we're going green. But I understand what Robin is saying in terms of it being like a marketing ploy to sell more phones, saying, hey, we quote-unquote give it to you, even though it's probably factored into the price of the phone.
Yeah, for me, I feel like the whole green angle doesn't hold sway with me. I don't buy that for a second. I think, like, again, if a smartphone manufacturer or any kind of local company that's doing something locally is going to be quite savvy, bundling charging stuff at a cheaper price, or in fact just lowering the price at retail for charging and accessories would be a very smart move in my opinion. But then again, I'm not really paid to make those decisions. So yeah, I think it's just a very interesting thing that you might see, and we could potentially see as early as January when the Galaxy S30 or S21, whatever it's going to be called, gets revealed. And I think if it doesn't feature a wall charger, I wouldn't be surprised if the rest of 2021 that a lot of the flagship devices in particular start ditching the wall charger as part of the packaging. And in the coming years, I think the consumers are going to be suffering as a result.
Cool. So moving on, this week I reviewed Watch Dogs Legion. If you are a gamer, you are well aware that this release marks the start of release season. With Watch Dogs being the first, next up is Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and then Destiny 2 Beyond Light, and then it was meant to be Cyberpunk, but that was delayed. And I'm actually quite thankful for that, because all of these games are games that I want to play. So Watch Dogs Legion puts you in London, a near-future London, where a terrorist attack has taken place, and the main protagonist of Watch Dogs, DedSec, the organization that tries to hack the powers that be, they scatter to the wind, they fall prey to a raid, and a couple of months later, the hacking collective is reborn. And you pick up the dead pieces of DedSec and try to piece them back together and bring the organization back to life. And this is where the main feature of Watch Dogs Legion comes into play. And that is the ability to play as anybody that you happen across in London. So while you're walking around, we played the game on PC, just for some context. You will walk through the streets of London and you hold down your middle mouse button on a character, and then it'll bring up a little bit of a blurb about them. It'll show you what occupation they have, whether they have access to any special uniforms that allows them to access restricted areas, whether they have any unique weapons, and then the abilities that they can bring to your team. So these abilities are things like being able to get out of hospital faster, or spending less time in prison, or taking less damage, or being able to summon a construction drone, which you can then hop on and traverse London vertically if you want. So there's a lot of diversity, and all of these different abilities are kind of randomly rolled. In fact, that's how the entire population of Ubisoft's London works. Everybody is procedurally generated. So when you happen across somebody, you hit your middle mouse button, and then it generates this all of this stuff live while you're playing the game. It's really, really well done and completely seamless. And yeah, so then you start playing the game, you start doing missions, taking down
the main big bad, who in this game is called Zero Day. They are another hacking collective that you don't know much about. The other two baddies in the game are a private security corporation called Albion that was hired by the government to protect the people of London. And then there's Mary Kelly from the Kelly family gang. And they are just a gang that deals with human trafficking and all sorts of very, very bad things. So throughout this game, the tone is incredibly dark. If you played the first two Watch Dogs games, so the first one was, to my mind, a bit of a flop. It tried to be very dark, it tried to be very serious, but it came more feeling forced and not very well thought out. The second game was a little bit lighter in terms of the tone of the story. I mean, you're still dealing with some really touchy stuff, but it was lighter compared to what Watch Dogs Legion is. Because within the first mission, you are... I'm not going to spoil this here, but you witness something that kind of makes you go, what did I just see? What just happened? And then throughout the game, that's constantly on your mind. But I think one of the most important points here is that if you don't like politics in your video games, this is not the game for you. Because Legion is very much entrenched in the politics of technology. What I mean by that is throughout the game, you get this impression that the people of London have sort of allowed the situation that they're now in to happen by allowing big corporations to hoover up their data, by allowing the government to just do whatever it wants.
That sounds very familiar.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an allegory for what's happening in the world right now. And it's really well done. And what's even more fascinating is that this game came out or started development in 2015, so long before whatever's happening today is happening. And I'm sure that there is a lot of current influence that was put into the game at a later stage. But I think for the most part, a lot of this was built a couple of years ago. And some of the parallels that are drawn are just so frightening. Like, for instance, while you're walking around London, you'll come across some protests. And some protests were literally just about citizens wanting to be let out of their homes. And, like, being able to walk the streets freely and having their freedom back. And it's such a jarring thing to see when you're playing this in a game. And you kind of go, whoa, hang on, this hits a bit close to home. But then, as I said, you get the feeling that the citizens have put themselves in this situation. But then at the same time, with DedSec, there's kind of this feeling that the citizens have had enough and they are now, the government took what they allowed too far. And yeah, it turns out to be a very engaging game. Even just driving around and listening to like the talk radio or the podcasts that you pick up around the world, like it paints such a frightening picture of London and our modern world as it is. And it just keeps you wanting to play to find out what's going to happen. Sort of like, am I going to be able to predict the future with this game? It's really, really good at that. So, as I mentioned, all of your characters can be recruited as you play, and that's a lot of fun. But I think one of my biggest issues with the game, in fact, my only issue with the game, is how some of those operatives work. So there's a class of operative, who are the people that you hire to join DedSec, called Prestige Operatives. And the only way you can get these is by real-world microtransactions. You have to pay real money to unlock them in the game. And that's kind of sucky because I'm going to use Destiny as an example here. In Destiny, you can go and buy exotic weapons from a vendor every Friday. And that's cool and it's nice to like kind of round out your collection. But nothing beats the thrill of this exotic yellow thing, engram, dropping from an enemy on the ground. Because you don't know what it is. It could be something new. And that thrill is so exciting. And I feel like Watch Dogs doesn't have that thrill. You can collect stuff. You pick things up around the world, like masks for your character and a whole bunch of things. But you can't actually get prestige operatives, who are these people that have very specific skills, very specific weapons. So, for instance, one of the operatives that I've been using quite often is a hitman. He's a hired gun, and he has a grenade launcher and an AR rifle. And he takes he can do a dodge roll. That's his special ability. But the problem is that I can't find people like that in the real world, which kind of feels like a letdown, like you have to pay money for it. With that having been said, though, there are enough interesting characters in the real world, like weapons dealers, paramedics, security guards. You can even hire people from Albion, the Kelly Gang, and they can join your team. And that's really, really helpful because it helps you get into sticky or places that you might not be able to get into. But so there's this really, really great space that Ubisoft has created here. And the prestige operatives kind of sours the experience just a little bit because you're going to have to pay real money to unlock those people. But the gameplay here is chef's kiss. It's so much fun. As I mentioned, we played on PC. There is a bug. Ubisoft has said that there are several bugs on Xbox, PlayStation, and PC that are being patched today. So if you've bought Watch Dogs Legion, look out for day one, or I suppose it's a day two patch now, today, that fixes a lot of performance issues. For instance, during our PC review, whenever we approached a large body of water, like the Thames, frame rate would just tank down to like 4 FPS from a locked 75 FPS. So just take note of that. It's not game-breaking. And the moment you turn away from the water, the frame rate returns to normal. So I'm sure it's something that'll be fixed in a day one patch and graphics drivers as well. But overall, Watch Dogs Legion is definitely a must-play game. If you enjoy things like GTA or Red Dead Redemption or something like that, you will really, really enjoy this. The gameplay never gets stale because you can literally just switch to a granny who's got permadeath perk, or randomly dies at any given time, and that's a thrill in and of itself. So I really think it's worth playing. If you have Ubisoft Plus, definitely play it. If you're waiting for the other games, I mean, I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money, but I think Watch Dogs is really, really worth it.
So, Brendan, before we go on, just want to ask you something.
Yeah.
How's the performance overall, except from the water?
Absolutely fantastic. I mean, I was running it at the high preset, so that's one below ultra, and I was hitting a perfect solid 75 FPS because that's what my monitor is locked to, so I just prefer playing games locked to the 75. And it performs really, really well. You will have to have VSync enabled. I do just also want to mention there is an in-game benchmark in Watch Dogs Legion, and I have a suspicion that a number of reviewers are going to start using it as a benchmark because it is very, very good. On par with Shadow of the Tomb Raider in terms of benchmarking. So if you start seeing Watch Dogs Legion as a benchmark in soon, that's why.
Cool. That sounds like one to watch out for.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, let's move on. Robin, you have an interview with us this week. Or for us this week, I mean. Not with us.
I chatted to Jason Jenkinson. He is the country marketing manager for Dell Technologies. And we discussed next month's Dell Technologies Forum, which is happening on the 25th of November. As all events this year have been going virtual, so has the Dell Technologies Forum. So we kind of discussed what delegates can expect from the event, which is free to register for. We also kind of looked at the workload agile team that the forum will be focusing on and kind of what that would entail, as well as kind of his thoughts as regards to events moving forward. Obviously, because of COVID, everyone's going virtual, but we kind of talked about hybrid events and kind of having a mix of in-person and virtual moving forward. So yeah, really interesting discussion and a nice little preview for what's to come next month for the Dell Technologies Forum.
Cool. Well, let's jump straight into that then. You can join the Dell Technologies Forum from anywhere on the 25th of November from 10 a.m. to midday. The forum aims to help your business be better prepared for what's next and find out how to accelerate your digital transformation journey, no matter the size of your business.
Hi, this is Romney Chetty reporting for Hypertext, and joining me today is Jason Jenkinson. Jason is the Country Marketing Manager for Dell Technologies South Africa, and our topic of discussion today is the Dell Technologies Forum, taking place next month on the 25th of November. As many events have done in 2020, Dell Technologies Forum is going virtual. So first of all, Jason, thanks for joining us. We do appreciate you taking the time.
Great, thanks, Robin. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Yes, so we all know as to why Dell Technologies has chosen to go virtual. The COVID-19 pandemic and lockdown has been well documented at this stage. So perhaps as far as the forum goes, what kind of opportunities does it present Dell Technologies as far as engaging with customers and attendees goes now that it's virtual?
I think the big advantage that it has for the delegates that are going to be attending the event is that all of the presentations, so we've got 27 workshops that are going to be done, or 27 sessions that are going to be happening, and those are going to be presented by, basically, it's like these people are going to be the best that Dell has to offer globally. So they are going to be getting access to the best minds within Dell on a global level to present those specific sessions through to the delegates. So I think that's the first thing. The next thing around it is that during those presentations, experts that are going to be online. So if any of the delegates have got any questions around anything that's been presented, they can go into the chat window, they can ask questions about it, talk about what would be the correct roadmaps for them, and then maybe even set up follow-up meetings from that. So it is a more interactive format, and it is an opportunity to hear some of the greatest minds in the industry.
Yeah, it's good to hear that there'll almost be a greater amount of access now that the forum is going virtual. And I just wanted to find out, I guess this is a bit more anecdotal, but having dealt with Dell Technologies in the past, and specifically the Tech Byte events, which have also been virtual in 2020, have those kind of served as good preparation for the forum next month?
I think that we've learned a lot from the Tech Bytes, and we do have a good turnout to those events. What we've learned out of the Tech Bytes is that you need to make these events as interactive as possible. So, you would have heard me talking about the chat functionality, which is what people want. They want to be able to reach out. They want to be able to interact. They don't just want these webinars to be or these online events to be a one-way session. So that's the first thing that we've learned. The second thing that we've learned out of it is that we need to make these as entertaining as possible as well. Obviously there's a strong business message that needs to come across, but we also need to make sure that that it's delivered in a way that is interesting, and we also need to have some fun aspects built into that. So Robin, if you wouldn't mind, maybe I can talk about some of the fun aspects that we've got planned.
Yes,
that,
please.
That the delegates can look forward to. So the big one is that we've got Jacques Nienaber. He's the Springbok head coach. So Jacques will be taking us through why technology is so important in sport, and more particularly why it was important to the Springboks in their run-up to the World Cup, and during the recent months as well, just staying in contact with all of the players and preparing for big matches. So how they use technology to do that. So that's always it's always interesting to kind of see something like sport, which we wouldn't naturally associate with using, massive amounts of compute power, and how the Springboks have done that to leverage their performance. And then the second thing is that we've got a pre-recording from our global chairman and CEO. So Michael Dell will also he'll be delivering a message via a pre-recorded video for our delegates in South Africa. So I think that's also something that that the delegates can look forward to.
Yeah, that sounds great. So one of the themes for next month's forum is workload agile. I was wondering if you could perhaps just unpack that as far as what it means from a Dell Technologies perspective.
Yeah, so that's quite an interesting topic. So I'll just put a couple of stats out there. So 80% of organizations have accelerated their digital transformation strategies over the past few months. That's a number that comes from IDG, mm-hmm. as well as 1 in 3 have worried about their survival over the next 2 years. So they're worried about, are they still going to be in business over the next couple of years with the way things are going? And that's really what it's about. You know, if we look at workload agile, those are some of the issues that we aim to tackle. So organizations who want to see how can they accelerate their digital transformation strategy, how can they make it real and get some real benefits out of that? That's what workload agile is for us at Dell. So if you're an organization of any size that wants to have a look at how you can do that, this would definitely be of interest. And just other stats on that. So 60% of workers are also working out of normal hours. So they're, you know, out of our normal traditional hours, people are now being a lot more flexible. And 83% of our customers, they want customized products and they want them fast. And that's a stat that comes from Forbes. We also, some of the other research that we've looked at around this is by 2025, those organizations that are leveraging artificial intelligence, their productivity will have increased by 100%. So in the next 5 years, they'll be doubling their production just through the use of artificial intelligence. The other two issues to look at, we've got multi-cloud, which is obviously something that a lot of organizations are looking at now as to how they can spread their risk, how they can manage their different workloads across different cloud platforms, and then driving innovation through data. So, and that's, that's something easy to say, but, you know, if we look at how you can make that real, it's about building a platform and then also about creating secure digital workplaces. And that's, I know that's a lot to kind of look at under one heading around work agile, but that's what it means to us. It's, if we look at it, it's really around, how can you manage your compute platforms? And then how can you manage your mobile workforce in a secure way that enables them to, to work from anywhere at any time, in a productive manner.
Yeah, thanks for that insight there. Obviously, a lot of really interesting topics that are going to be touched on during the forum next month. You also mentioned earlier that they're going to be around about 27 different breakout sessions. I'm assuming they'll be touching on a lot of the topics that you've just mentioned, but are there any in particular that you are perhaps interested in or that you'll be participating in?
So the one that interests me the most, so we've got three different pillars that we're going to be working through. So the one is flexible IT, mm-hmm. The second one is digital workplace, and the last one is innovating through data. So there's a couple in there that I will definitely be attending. The one is around work from home and business continuity. I think that's something that's really important. There's a lot of interesting insights within that topic, and we've all been kind of working from home for a while, so I'm quite curious to attend that session. And then there's one in our innovating through data pillar, and that is around artificial intelligence and emerging technology. And I always find that kind of thing, it's very kind of future thinking. There's a lot of interesting stuff around how we see the world changing, and all that kind of futuristic thought leadership is, it's always interesting. So I'll definitely be attending that session.
Great stuff. So I wanted to perhaps get your thoughts with regards to the forum itself. Obviously, it's been an annual event. It's also been in person. Now that it's going virtual, that's almost been necessitated by circumstances outside of Dell Technologies' control. But moving forward, do you think that the purely virtual format will be something that Dell Technologies will look to do more of, or will it be almost like a hybrid experience? What are your thoughts there?
Robin, my thoughts on that is that I think we're going to go hybrid experience. Mm-hmm. And I think we've learned out of this period that there's a lot of, we would do an event here in Joburg, then we do an event in Cape Town, and then we would have maybe, some of our customers who are in some of the surrounding countries, so up in Mozambique, in Botswana, in Namibia, and we find that when we're running these online events, just our breadth of reach across the different areas is fantastic. I'm getting customers that are logging in from Mauritius to come and watch our events. And I think in the future, if we just go back to physical events, I think it would think we would miss out on a lot of opportunities to touch some of our customers in those areas that are outside of our main metropolitan areas. And it's amazing. I think those guys, you know, in those areas, a lot of them are quite starved for some information and just some, you know, ways to interact around new technology and, you know, and new ways of doing things and how they can modernize their infrastructure. And so, yeah, I think it's definitely going to go hybrid. I think that I think most of the organizations that are, you know, that have learned something out of this period will do the same.
Yeah, I'm also, of the opinion that hybrid is a more interesting model moving forward. So I know obviously you can't give away too much as far as what's going to be happening for announcements for next month's forum. Perhaps you could give us a couple of teasers, though. I know that in the past, Dell Technologies has had some pretty important announcements, things like involving Microsoft and VMware, for example. Is there anything we can look at for next month? I know that, say, for example, Project Apex, we could perhaps get a bit more insight on that front.
That's why I think the big announcement happened at Dell Technologies World around Apex. I think we locally, we might be looking to just expand a little bit on that around what it means for our customers in South Africa in the future, because it is a roadmap. It's not something that's happening overnight. It's definitely going to be a roadmap for us, to work at it over the next couple of years. So there could be something around that. And then just around the Springboks as well. I think we might see, something around our involvement with the Springboks as well.
Cool. Great to hear. Yeah, we'll definitely keep an eye out on both fronts as far as announcements go. I think that's going to do it for our chat today. Is there perhaps any last word you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I think the one I'd like to say is, come through to the event. It is free. There's no fee to sign up for it. If you would like to sign up for the event and become a delegate, just go through to our social media channels. I think that's the easiest way to do it. If you go through to Facebook and Twitter, look at DellTechZA. You will see that there's posts for the event, so you can just go there, click on those, on the links on those posts. That'll take you through to the registration page. Sign up for the event on the 25th. Once you've signed up, we'll take you through the process. So you'll get all the information emailed through to you, and then on the day, there'll be a events assistant that will come up and talk you through the event on the day. So very easy, very simple process to sign up, and we look forward to seeing everyone there.
Great stuff. Yes, we look forward as well. I will add some links to all the different sites and portals that people can register for the Dell Technologies Forum next month in the post just below. And again, our thanks to Jason Jenkinson, that's Country Marketing Manager, for Dell Technologies South Africa. We really, again, appreciate you taking the time to chat for us. And best of luck with the forum next month.
Great. Thanks a lot, Robin.
Cool. Thank you. Take care.
This year's Dell Technologies Forum will feature a pre-recorded address from Michael Dell, Chairman and CEO of Dell Technologies. Come and hear from the Springboks and how Dell Technologies helps the champions stay on top of their game. Cool, that was a very interesting conversation, Robin. Thanks so much for doing that for us. I won't lie, I do quite enjoy the Dell Technologies Forum. I know they sponsor this podcast, but it is one of my favorite events to attend every year. I'm curious to see how the online the virtual event functions. I mean, we've seen some good online events and we've seen some bad, so hopefully Dell manages to knock this one out of the park. Though, if I'm honest, their events are usually very, very good. So,
yeah, their tech bites that they have monthly are usually pretty good. And I think there will be some interesting announcements specifically around the Dell Technologies World event that they had recently. Specifically stuff around Project Apex, which is a very cloud-specific offering. But yeah, it should be a good one.
Awesome. And I think that's going to do it from us for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks so much to Dell Technologies for sponsoring this edition of the AfriCast. We really, really appreciate it. Thanks so much for joining us again. From myself, Brendan Losh, cheerio, from Clinton Matos.
Bye, everybody.
And from Robin Lee Chasey.
Take care, everyone.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye. Join us online for the Dell Technologies Forum from anywhere on the 25th of November from 10 to midday. Go to @DellTechZA on Twitter or Facebook to register for free to attend this year's forum.